Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are once again here live, 110, or as Harlem Heat would say, 110th Street, sucker, episode 110. I am here, Chris Featherstone, along always with the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent, Derek, in the building.
In the building, in the house. In the tent, TP, whatever you go by. Hey, this is Derek, Raw correspondent. Now, the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. This is the best night, Tuesday night, Pancakes and Power Slams. Chris Featherstone, I'm Derek, Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. Let's get the thing going. This is 90 minutes of pure wrestling love. And we're going to try to get as much as we can in 90 minutes. Never enough time. 347-884-8452, chat room, tweet, carrier pigeon, whatever your preference is. We are here tonight. Yeah.
Absolutely. And as always, we have trivia on deck, and this time we have Extreme Rules coverage as well as Raw, SmackDown, ROH, time permitting, and the Flavor of the Week. Thank you for all of the wonderful feedback as far as the last week's Flavor of the Week is concerned. Top 10 heels of the 1980s last week. We had a lot of fun with that. And so we have another top 10 list this week, and we have the top 10 heels of the 1990s. Ooh, top 10 heels of the 1990s. And it is going to be a doozy. I'm very, very excited, and it's going to be such an amazing time. So let's go right into it. We got so much to cover. We got Extreme Rules 2014. Starts off with the WLC match, El Torito defeating Hornswoggle. To be honest with you, this match wasn't a terrible match. It wasn't terrible. I suppose it was the comic relief to set off Extreme Rules, and it wasn't a horrible match. The last spot that El Torito did on the table with Hornswoggle, it was decent, and I mean I guess that's the best type of midget match that we can have. Real quick, I don't know if anybody checked this out on WrestlingInc.com or wherever, but one of the commentators, I believe Steve Sampson, if I'm not mistaken, he tweeted before the event with the picture of him at the announcer's table, because of course the midget match, the WLC match, it was at the pre-show, and he got a lot of flack for it because in the back, behind him in the seating area, on the horizon, it was John Cena and the Wyatt family going over their match. And it was really, really interesting to see. And check it out. He deleted the tweet, but of course, when it deals with media, it's hard to really delete something. So it was very interesting to see that John Cena talking to John Cena go over his match with Bray Wyatt in the back, behind Samson in the seating area. So really interesting. But as far as the match itself, wasn't a bad opener. I got to give credit where credit is due. It was better than I expected. It wasn't too great, but it was better than I expected.
It was better than you expected. It was okay, yeah. Opening to a pay-per-view that was run-of-the-mill pay-per-view, kind of, so I'll give you that much. Great opener. With the whole midget wrestling and all that, I understand the comic relief, and that's good. So, pay-per-view got a lot better after that, though.
Indeed. First question, trivia. Come on to the chat room. What was Nikita Koloff's nickname? What was Nikita Koloff's nickname? Next we have Cesaro. We have Cesaro defeating RVD and Jack Swagger. I wrote on Bleacher Report. I wrote an article on Bleacher Report on Sunday as far as which match would steal the show. And this was one of these. I see Russian Bear in the chat room. That is not correct. That was Ivan Koloff's nickname, not Nikita's. Russian Bear was Ivan Koloff's. The Nikita Koloff's was something else. So keep trying, chat room. Keep those answers coming in. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. And like I was saying, Cesaro, RVD, Jack Swagger. I wrote an article on Bleacher Report saying that this was the now I see Russian Sickle. Nope, that was his finisher. That was his finishing move. Not yet. Keep going, chat room. But this was a really good match, high octane match, and I figured that it was going to be such because putting these three it was a thrown together match, but it was worth it because Paul Heyman, for the most part, with the exception of Jack Swagger, Paul Heyman was the common denominator in this match, and it was good to see him outside in the ring and Zeb Coulter, and then RVD really brought that element that this feud needed. He brought that extra touch to make it a really good match, and I was impressed with this match, and of course Cesaro getting the win was a good rub for him, and so great opener to start the show.
RVD can make just about anything look good. I mean, really, for the exception of last Monday night, not last Monday, but the Monday before. Yeah, it was a great opener. As Cesaro, I mean, totally stood his ground, obviously. He won. He had Swagger, who's still prancing around for whatever reason, no one knows. I mean, there's no way he could ever tangle with Cesaro, so we'll forget about that. But RVD, it was a great opener. Like you just said, phenomenal match. And it just goes to show that these veterans can really come back and show the new guys how to put on a really good show. So, and that's what they did.
Absolutely. Still not the correct answer. Chat room, Twitter, at Crave Wrestling. No correct tweets yet. No correct answers on the chat room. Come on. Nikita Koloff was known as the... what? Not that difficult. Shouldn't be, at least. Next we have, now we just have very funny answers coming out of the chat room. Next we have Alexander Rusev, which we reported today on WrestlingAid.com that similar to Antonio Cesaro no longer being Cesaro. I mean, no longer having the Antonio name, just being Cesaro. And then Big E no longer being Big E Langston, just being Big E. Somehow WWE spends way too much time on their hands trying to figure out the correct name on someone. And we reported today that now Alexander Rusev is just Rusev. They dropped the Alexander from his name. And so, I mean, come on now. There's way more things to do, way more important things to do than to make sure that someone's name is just Rusev, just going by one name. Alexander Rusev sounded Bulgarian. It was very, had a Bulgarian feel to it. And just to say Rusev, it's not going to work out. But, of course, he defeats Xavier Woods in R-Truth. Squash match really didn't mean anything, and it was really a waste of space.
It is a waste of space. Rusev still hasn't really done anything, and go against R-Truth. Yeah, it was a match. It was a filler. Not focused too much on this. I mean, it was decent. Rusev just needs a bigger build, but I don't know how to do that for him. And obviously the blonde that comes out before that can't really do it either.
Lana.
She's going to be
yes.
in the Divas division, who knows. But anyway, yeah, R-Truth blew it. And Rusev knew it.
Well, there you go. There you go. There's your R-Truth rhyme right there. All right, well, since no one has gotten the Nikita Koloff name correct, I would ask Derek, since, you know, the protocol is if the chat room or Twitter can't get it right, then I turn it over to Derek. But I got a feeling that Derek doesn't know this one. I got a feeling that the almighty wrestling trivia guy, Derek, does not know this one. Let's see if our Crave Wrestling administrative team knows it. Yes, absolutely. The Russian Nightmare, Nikita Koloff.
Are you there?
The Russian Sequel. Yeah.
Are you there?
Absolutely.
Russian Nightmare. That's my answer. I think you cut out a few seconds ago.
No. No, I didn't. No. I was loud and clear. Loud and living color.
The feed cut out.
No. No cutout feed. We are very clear, loud and clear here. Next question is, what wrestler was known as the Lariat? What wrestler was known as the Lariat? Next we get Ray Barry defeating Big E. Okay, great job. Real quick, Stan Hansen, indeed. Stan Hansen, and he won a world title where? How about that? Let me one up that quick trivia, the quick trivia room, and see if they're really big on their wrestling skills. Since Stan Hansen was said so quickly, which is a good job. I got to give it to y'all. Y'all didn't know that Nikita Koloff was the Russian Nightmare, but y'all did know that Stan Hansen was the Lariat. So good job there. All right, so we have Wade Barrett defeating Big E Langston. Well, I'm sorry, Big E. I suppose it makes sense. It made sense. Wade Barrett is so much on his push right now. Bad news. I've got some bad news. Bad News Baird is really his name. And so, well, his new name at least. And so, I understand why he won. I understand why he won the title, the Intercontinental title. But what gets me, though, is I do not understand why they just decided to abandon. I don't understand why they decided to abandon Big E's push. It's just, it's ridiculous. The guy can talk. He never really had a chance to. He could talk. He could wrestle for someone as big as he is. He he could wrestle, and it makes absolutely no sense at all that they just decided to just poorly book him. It makes me so upset. I do not understand at all why the WWE would just decide to abandon his push. I understand that Wade Barrett's Bat News Barrett, he's a hot ticket right now. I understand that, but just their decision to just totally almost say forget Biggie Langston is ridiculous. He doesn't deserve it. He was over it when he won the title, and it was total bad booking that caused him to become almost a nobody.
Well, he's a nobody now, so you got that much right. I mean, seriously, it's nothing against Barrett, but, I mean, just the way they've been pushing Langston, he's been IC champion for a long time, well, for however long. Long enough. And just,
6 months.
Yeah,
almost
just,
6 months.
Wow. Barrett comes in and just totally destroys the whole legacy almost. I mean, if you don't see Biggie Langston for the next 2 or 3 months, you would almost forget that he was ever there.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the angle. I think it's weird. Langston obviously is the lesser man of the two as far as the WWE is concerned. So what's next? What's going to go on? And that's the question. Wow.
Yeah, and I don't even see Big E. I mean, of course, he had the rematch on Raw that we'll get to, but I don't even see him being involved in any type of feud. The crazy thing is Barrett is so over. I understand that that the Bad News Barrett character is over. It's fun, but he's a heel, and that's what really gets me is that you have someone coming out doing his best to become a heel, calling people just like scums and slobs and just all kind of derogatory names and degrading names. And he just totally just, you know, sabotages the city that he's in. I'm afraid I've got some bad news. And he'll just talk about how, you know, he's not worthy, the city that he's in is not worthy of being, you know, near him, and all these things to get cheered. So is it like, my thing is it a matter of just the people understanding that they're scum and just kind of siding to it? I like Bear because I like his gimmick. I think his gimmick is funny. However, you know, not over Big E at all. Definitely not over Big E. And I think the fact that Big E is getting booed now because of feuding with Barrett doesn't make any sense. And if the WWE really want to spend some time pushing someone, have them feud against a major heel, period. Why can't we have a Big E feud? I keep wanting to say Langston, but it's just Big E now. Why can't we just have a Big E feud against a Damian Sandow or a Titus O'Neil or someone to that nature? Why can't we have Big E versus Batista? Why can't we have that? Why can't we have Big E versus Randy Orton? And if the WWE really wanted to push their talent, Big E versus, I mean, he's had some good matches versus Alberto Del Rio even. But Big E versus Batista would be really, really good to me. And who knows, Big E versus Brock Lesnar. But for some reason, Big E versus Batista sounds really good to me. But the WWE, unfortunately, they don't have the faith in Big E as much as they did before. And it's sad because he had the opportunity to be the future, one of the futures of the company. But it's sad that when people, the past few years, when people get that Intercontinental Championship, it's like a bad omen to them. So as soon as they get the title, the chase is you know, they become popular in the chase, but when they get that title, they just, the WWE just, they just pull the plug on any type of booking. Curtis Axel, he had a decent push on the way to the Intercontinental Championship and then just did absolutely nothing. Cody Rhodes had a decent push, and the beginning of his Intercontinental Championship run was decent. But the previous three Intercontinental Championship runs by Wade Barrett was pointless. Miz's Intercontinental title run was garbage. Kofi Kingston's title runs weren't good. So there has not, other than Christian, because he revived the division a bit when he won the Intercontinental Championship. But Derek, what can be done to revive that Intercontinental title? Now, I understand that the tournament was a really good idea, but it led us to a champion that's already been champion before. And maybe Barrett will help revive it, although this is his fourth time being Intercontinental Champion. But what can be done to really revive that title, to make it the number two title again, especially since the world titles are unified now? So that is the solid number two title. What can be done to revive it?
What can be done? Who can say what can be done? I mean, they've done so much to try to revive it, but they haven't, I guess, bring Christian back, because Christian's the only one that can really carry it and be awesome with it. Wade Barrett can do something with it, although he's been champion so many times. I mean, that's the thing with these belts that are exchanging hands so many times. There's no really one prominent person that you can see that say, hey, he was an IC champion that was absolutely phenomenal. That doesn't happen anymore, even with any of his championships. They change hands so many times, and it's even just everybody that was in the tournament for the IC championship. Half of them they've already been champions of the Intercontinental belt. And it's lost its prominence. That's too bad. They could bring it back. They just have to have somebody have it, hold it. They had that with Langston, and they just kind of threw up on it. So,
yeah, pretty much. And I think it's a good point. You had someone as newer. You had someone who never had the title before, who was getting some really good pops as he was feuding with Curtis Axel. I would like to see Big E versus Ryback, too. That would be a good feud. See, that's my thing. Why couldn't you just allow Big E to really get into some good feuds? Alberto Del Rio, Ryback. You know, there's enough mid-card heels for him to be in a good feud. So Jack Swagger would have been another good one. So, yeah, it's sad. As far as the one-up answer, still don't see that. The correct answer for that is he was champion in AWA and in All Japan. He was heavyweight champions in both of those promotions. Next question is, before Strikeforce, Rick Martel was a member of what WWE tag team? Before Strikeforce, Rick Martel was a member of what WWE tag team? Next, we have Shield defeating Evolution. This match was an amazing, amazing, amazing match. And was, to me, I thought this was going to be a match of the night. It definitely delivered. Surprised that it wasn't the main event. The placement surprised me a bit, but all in all, the action outside the ring, all the amazing spots. Seth Rollins, just a spot monkey, and he does such a fantastic job at it. Dean Ambrose with his crazy antics. Roman Reigns with his Superman punch and spear. Fantastic match, and this definitely was a match of the year candidate.
Yeah. It was good. You know, you had Evolution Shield. Batista was pinned. I really like how this is going with the two factions. looks like Evolution's kind of getting the short end of the stick of it and all, but, you know, so far, so good. Triple H back in the ring. What can you say about that? Other than he could be in there with better people than Randy Orton and Batista. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and I'm okay with Evolution continuing to lose because I think that the purpose should be putting Shield over. I really think that putting the Shield over is the way to go when it comes to this feud. Maybe, you know, if there's another match at Payback, maybe Evolution wins and then Money in the Bank, the rubber match, you know, maybe in a cage or something like that. I'd be okay with that. As far as the rubber match is concerned, it would be okay. Or maybe even having a rubber match at SummerSlam, I'd be okay with that too. So this could stretch out. As basically there was back and forth reports about Batista leaving this previous pay-per-view Extreme Rules, but it seems like he's not going to take some time off because basically the WWE, he wasn't expecting what he has been doing the past 4 months. He hasn't really expect that, which hasn't really been anything. He was pinned to be WWE World Heavyweight Champion come WrestleMania, but I'm surely glad that that didn't happen. But he hasn't really done much. I like the Evolution reunion. I like it. It's, you know, for the sake of putting the Shield over and making them, you know, really spotlighting the Shield, I'm okay with that. But Batista is a singles wrestler. He's not really made a mark at all. And, you know, he was supposed to take time off to do some promo work for his new movie and then come back around SummerSlam time. But, I mean, if he came or if he stayed, it wouldn't really matter to me much.
Nope, it wouldn't matter at all. Who cares? Go do your movie. Come back and sell ice cream cones or something.
I see Pan Am Connection in the chat room. That is not correct. No one in that team was from Panama. Someone was from Canada, hint, hint. But no one was never from Panama. You got the Am right, the America. But no one was ever from Panama. So I gave you a hint. Oh, so I guess you gave yourself the reins to say the answer once again. It never fails. 110 episodes. Derek still does not get it. It's just funny. I gave the hint. It was a strong hint, so I'll let you pass this time. Next, we have Bray Wyatt defeating John Cena. I still cannot connect to this feud. I still can't do it. And the reports are out now that they're going to stretch this paper. They're going to stretch this feud out even past Payback. And oh my goodness! I mean, just stop with just forcing me to indulge this feud. I'm not. There's just not a connection to me. Bray Wyatt against John Cena is just not clicking. It's just not clicking. And then when you had, you know, his follower, his kid follower, I forgot who, it was the son of some former WWE personality. I don't remember who it was, but the kid having the rigged mic and just and the match was just absolutely horrible. For 20 minutes, you really had John Cena going against all members of the Wyatt family. He tried to go out this way of the cage, and then there's Luke Harper. Then he tried to go out this way, and there's Eric Rowan. And then it was just it was just too much. It was too confusing. It was all over the place. And then at the end, you have the lights go off, and then a rigged, a voice-altered mic with the kid saying that, and then somehow, I mean, is Make-A-Wish being included into this feud? It's just horrible. I don't like it at all, and it needs to go away because it's not going to be for a title. It's just going to continue to spoil. It's just going to continue to be a blotch in the Raw programming. And at the end, Cena's going to reign supreme, and what is it really going to do to Bray Wyatt?
It's not going to do anything. This is an absolute horrible feud. It's boring. It's dumb. It doesn't really make much sense anymore. It's got that creepy eeriness feeling to it, but that died a long time ago. But they're going to keep on doing it. I don't see an end to it. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. John Cena has a lot better things to do. And I'm pretty sure Bray Wyatt does too, but this is what we have to contend with for now, and probably maybe even 3 months from now. This will still be a factor.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world. Just,
in his hands.
Man. Please save me from your
ten
singing.
Hours at a time. Forever. It just keeps going on and on.
Yes. Just on and on and on and on. Especially during the Raw, I don't think it was the go-home Raw. I think it was the Raw before the go-home Raw. And, I remember he was cradling John Cena's face and head, and he just kept singing that song. It was just absolutely horrible. And what makes it even worse is that for some odd reason, they are deciding to they're deciding to continue this feud like something else is going to be different. I just don't understand. This is absolutely horrible, and it's just making me really question if they really want to push Bray, because it should be over with. But for some reason, they're just deciding to. For some reason, they really think that this is what Bray Wyatt needs. This is exactly what Bray Wyatt needs to become the guy. And so far, so absolutely, absolutely bad.
Bray Wyatt and Heyman are going to get together, and they're going to realize that Jim Cornette is the only person that can push the Wyatts to where they need to be.
I don't quite understand why you would think that. I don't understand why you think that Jim Cornette
in a perfect world.
You said in a perfect world? Whose perfect world?
Wrestling's, of course. But anyway, I don't know. I think the Wyatts are in some way. I think Heyman's going to find his way into the Wyatt family. Maybe or maybe not, but I don't know what other options they have to keep them prominent, keep them going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully something, really. I mean, hopefully something out of this. I don't necessarily know who, but I don't necessarily know what, but hopefully something. All right, next we have Paige defeating Tamina. And I've said this many times before, I like Paige. I like what they're doing with Paige. I think it's a great idea that they're deciding to do that. It's a good idea that they're really finally deciding to put some level of competition with the with the women's division now, and instead of just ridiculous, pointless feuds that really haven't been anywhere, and I just noticed that AJ's been gone for a while. I just noticed that. Very interesting, knowing that she's that her and CM Punk are together. Very interesting to see why she has been gone for a while. I don't think that's a coinkydink. So, I don't know. I think it's a good idea that they're doing what they're doing right now as far as the Paige coming in and more just a better level of competition when it comes to the women's division. And it's making it exciting. It's making it fun. It's causing it to become exciting again, finally.
Oh, finally. And I've been the biggest advocate against the Divas Championship for a long time, but the Divas division, Paige has really turned it up a lot. And, yeah, AJ's been gone for a while. I mean, she was really the only prominent one for a while, a long time, actually. But I am seeing an upturn in the Divas division. I'm glad to see that. Against Tamina, Divas Championship. I mean, I'm glad Paige won. She's really carried it to the next level. So hopefully they can keep this thing going, bring in some more talent on Paige's level, because she's really blowing all the other Divas out of the sky as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. And then we had the main event, Daniel Bryan defeating Kane. I think this is a really good match. I think this was almost as good as the Shield versus Evolution. I definitely think there were – I was surprised at the spots that the WWE allowed. I mean, seeing how they're, you know, PG, I was definitely surprised the table spot, of course, and then with that the choke slams to the tables. It was a really fast paced match. It was some good spots for an Extreme Rules match, and that's really the best that you could get for an Extreme Rules match in a PG level. And so totally okay with that match. I was happy with it. It was confusing that he just popped up after that. I mean, it was really confusing that he just did that. Reports today came out that they wanted to do Batista versus Daniel Bryan, but because of the, you know, uncertainty of Batista being here come Payback in a few weeks, they wanted to have Kane pop up like that to continue the feud, as we saw on Raw, and eventually do a Buried Alive match, which I don't quite understand. You have an Extreme Rules match, which is a gimmick match. Now you're having a Buried Alive match. Kane's not going to win the title. I just don't see the WWE deciding to put it on Kane. And so, good matches. They've had really good matches over the past, you know, couple years. But are we really going to see a title change at Payback?
Probably not. I see Bryan holding it for a long time. Whether Triple H, Kane, anyone have anything to do with it, it was a decent match. I liked it. I knew Kane wasn't going to win, obviously, because no one's going to give Kane the strap. He's kind of...
Yeah.
Big Show, Mark Henry status. But, yeah, good props. I mean, it was a good end to a decent pay-per-view. So, give him that much.
Yeah.
I have a little bit to build on, but I don't see Bryan losing the title anytime soon.
I agree. And I do think it was – I actually think it was a better pay-per-view than WrestleMania was. I definitely think it was. WrestleMania was a bit too all over the place. And then, of course, the Undertaker losing to Brock Lesnar, who still isn't there. And so, you know, it really didn't – WrestleMania was, of course, gimmick-heavy and showcasey, as always. But I you know, I think it was a better solid card than WrestleMania was. So kudos to Extreme Rules. They usually have a solid card every year. Nothing real big, nothing, you know, as far as monumental concerned. But, you know, I think it was a solid card overall. So kudos to the WWE for that. All right, let's get into Raw. Next question is, what wrestler was known as the Body? What wrestler was known as the Body? Raw starts off with a 20-man U.S. title battle royal for Dean Ambrose's title that he had for almost a year. Thankfully, finally, he drops the title. And he drops it to Sheamus. And I like Sheamus. I'm totally okay with Sheamus being U.S. champion, but still, I just wish that we saw someone else. I really, really wish we saw someone else as the champion, because Sheamus had it before, and it just, somebody else. Just please, just somebody else. And so, it's been a rumored heel turn from Sheamus coming up, and so I suppose it makes sense. They've got a European tour coming up here soon. So I suppose it makes sense for two Europeans to be the, you know, mid-card champions, to be the U.S. and Intercontinental champion. So it makes sense. It totally makes sense. However, I do wish that someone like a Ryback, I think this would have been a good way to try to revive Ryback's career, although, you know, he had such high hopes to him, you know, the time when he was in the main event, but nowadays not so much. I definitely think that they could have done something with him, WWE could have done something with him being U.S. champ. Putting on Sheamus, but it's better than Fandango, that's for sure.
You just had to throw that in there. Fandango, where's he been? That's my guy.
He was in the Battle Royal. He got eliminated, though.
Yeah, he did. He did a good job at it, too.
Not so much.
Living the dream, Dusty Rhodes. So,
Former United States champion himself, the American Dream, if you will.
Yeah, well, I won't. No, I will for Dusty Rhodes, but whatever. So, yeah, I understand. Again, with the IC Championship, Sheamus has already had this, so why did he win? You could say,
States Championship?
Yeah, United States,
you said,
is what I said.
You said IC.
No, I didn't. You did. But anyway.
You did. Nope. You said IC.
I said high C, fruit punch.
The high C championship. Oh, okay. I see. I see championship, sure thing. Yeah, U.S. champion Sheamus.
You know what? If they would have given it to Ryback or had him be one of the last, you know, he would have messed it up again, send him back to the tag team, because that's where he's prominent right now. Keep him there. Keep him. You can't. I don't think you can bring back Ryback to be a huge guy yet. Let him spend the year in the tag team. After that, see what he can do. But overall, come on. I think it was a good choice on WWE's part. As far as doing that with the European tour coming up, Sheamus is the guy right now. He just came back from an injury. They want to expose him, make him more profitable, more merchandise. I get it.
Yeah.
2 days.
That's a good point. But he's going to be a United States champion on a European tour. That's a bit oxymoronic to me. Next we have, you think it's oxymoronic?
I get it. He's European, obviously, and he's got the U.S. championship, so that's cool. You know, kind of like Eminem being the best rapper of all time.
Oh. Yeah, that wasn't any type of jab to any type of anyone. But
yeah.
Next we have the RVD versus Cesaro match. RVD wins by DQ. They're making Cesaro. They're doing their best to really keep this heel heat up for Cesaro. It's like they're trying too hard to keep him a heel. The guy gets face pops all the time, and I understand that they're and what's so crazy about that is they're even putting Heyman. They're keeping Heyman with him. They're having Heyman continue to tout about Brock Lesnar. All roads lead to Brock Lesnar conquering The Undertaker's undefeated winning streak, which actually is starting to become very funny to me, that all roads lead to that. It's starting to become a joke, and it's sad because The Undertaker's last WrestleMania match has become a joke now, and it looks like it, and it might as well be one because it is a joke. And Paul Heyman is doing a very good job making it a joke. And the very fact that he gets so much heat for that and is with Cesaro, it's helping Cesaro build. See, that's the thing. Cesaro doesn't get heat because of what he does. He gets heat because of Heyman. And so, really, is Cesaro getting help by being with Heyman? Or is Paul Heyman's heat shrouding Cesaro, similar to what Zeb Coulter did to the Real Americans? So I don't think that this is really helping out Cesaro, because he was getting cheered for so much. You know, he still gets cheered when he does the big swing, but now he's getting heat because of Paul Heyman's being such a good heat magnet. So this is really a very prime example of the WWE having absolutely no clue what they want to do with Cesaro. With a good idea, they have no clue what they want to do with it, and this is a prime example.
When was the last time you saw Cesaro do the swing? I mean, it's been a while.
He's done it. He did it last week.
Yeah, last week. That was like 6 weeks ago. So, you got Cesaro.
Last week.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. And with him being with Paul Heyman, I understand, yeah. I mean, it's totally, I mean, especially, I'd be upset if I was Cesaro and Paul Heyman comes out and just exploding about another client that he has. And this is how I'm going to introduce my client right now, Cesaro. I mean, that would be a turnoff. I'd be really upset about that. And, yeah, with the Cesaro's not getting heat on his own. It's all from Paul Heyman screaming and yelling during the matches and just keep talking about the Undertaker streak, which is always going to be a nerve for WWE fans. So I don't know if this is going to last. Something's got to give. I mean, who knows? I mean, tomorrow you can see Coco Beware being a Paul Heyman guy.
If Coco Beware was a Paul Heyman guy, I would go out streaking on the freeway.
Stagger Lee.
See, that's the difference, though. If Stagger Lee becomes a Paul Heyman guy, I'd be totally fine with that. I'd be okay with Stagger Lee being a Paul Heyman guy, because Stagger Lee had what it took to become a Paul Heyman guy. Coco Beware, on the other hand, not so much. You had the colorful hair. You had Frankie coming out. You got you're flapping your arms like wings. You got the Birdman song. You got the Pile Driver song. If Coco Beware is a Paul Heyman guy, you have what else?
The white glove that he used to wear.
The Michael Jackson gloves. Coco Beware, when I was a kid, Coco Beware was one of the coolest things in the world. But in hindsight, Coco Beware was such a horrible gimmick. And he was like 5 foot nothing. And he was, don't get me wrong, Coco Beware is a good wrestler. He was a good wrestler. And he's been a good wrestler. He's been around. You know, he was going back and forth in the territories before he went in the WWE. Of course, Stagger Lee and other gimmicks. But Coco Beware, I guess it was good for the times because the WWE was more gimmick-heavy, larger than life. That was their thing. And so I get that. It makes sense. But Coco Beware these days, and to be in the Hall of Fame, too, that's what really gets me. But Pile Driver, there you go. There's your song, Pile Driver.
Yeah, that was a good song. Girls in Cars, too.
Girls in Cars, Strike Force. Strike Force was the Team USA was Real American, right?
The crew can get that playing, can't they? We love
girls and cars. Yeah, I could have the administrative team pull up some Girls and Cars here in a minute. I think that will just be such a great touch to a great show.
Exactly.
Next, we had Bray Wyatt at in-ring promo, and I don't necessarily more Bray Wyatt. Now he's saying that he's a god, and just a waste. Such a waste of time in this angle, and they're trying to wring as much out of the sponge as they possibly can until they just tear up the sponge. And it just makes absolutely no sense to continue this feud. Bray Wyatt won. He won the match. There you go. Move on. Move on to something bigger. I would be totally fine with a Bray Wyatt-Daniel Bryan match at Payback. He beat Daniel Bryan clean at the Royal Rumble. He got the best of Daniel Bryan in their feud. Daniel Bryan was a member of the Wyatt family. It could easily extend that feud and have a one-off match against Daniel Bryan. I beat you at Royal Rumble. I haven't forgot about you, Daniel. I haven't forgot about you. There's so many things that you could do. The match between Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan was match of the year candidate easily. But for some reason, the WWE, they don't see, I suppose they don't see money in that is why they're not doing it. Although it would be much more of a money feud than Cena versus Bray. This has to go.
Hey, what if they did Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan hair versus hair? Would that not sell?
Or beard versus beard.
Or anything, yeah. That would sell. I mean, that would absolutely sell. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're probably right. You're probably right, actually. But I don't see anybody giving up their beard for sure, because their beards are both of their gimmicks. Like, that's a part of both of their gimmicks. So
yeah,
I really doubt that.
As if people would buy that.
It would be interesting, though. I remember the Edge versus Kurt Angle hair versus hair match. That was pretty interesting. Then, of course, you have the WrestleMania. You had Bobby Lashley representing Donald Trump, and then, you know, Umaga representing Vince McMahon hair versus hair match. So usually the hair versus hair matches work. I think there was another one with Molly and Victoria, if I'm not mistaken. It was something to that nature. So we got the team on with some Girls in Cars. Thank you, Crave Wrestling Administrative Team. Shout out goes to WWE Credit and Girls in Cars. There you go.
That was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, the nice touch to the show. This makes so much sense to put in Girls in Cars today. All righty. Next we have Hornswoggle with 3MB, El Torito with Los Matadores segment. This segment was just absolute garbage, waste of time. And again, I'm just so surprised that the WWE would continue to do this, would continue to have this feud. But the funny part of it is they're more over than Los Matadores and 3MB is.
Yeah, they sure are. And yeah, it was dumb. It's hard to keep my interest. Just I like the comic shenanigans, but it's just not. It's not really fitting the bill anymore. It's kind of old. It's dumb. It's predictable. Let's get over it and move on to something better.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Next, we have Rusev defeating Kofi Kingston. He's another squash match, but I'm noticing an interesting trend, though. I don't want to say it live on air in front of thousands of listeners that we have, but I don't know. It's a weird trend that I'm seeing with Rusev's opponents. So I don't know. I would imagine that's a coincidence, but yeah, we'll just keep it at that.
Well, when you know you're going to face Kofi, you're pretty much at the bottom of the bill. So
yeah, pretty much. Nice way to patch all of that up. Nice. Very well said. You are at the bottom of the bill if you are affiliated with Kofi Kingston. If it doesn't matter who you are, if it's Randy Orton versus Kofi Kingston, it's an opener. So it's sad for Kofi Kingston because I mean this guy, he needs to. For those who don't know, Jeff Jarrett's launching a new wrestling promotion called Global Force Wrestling, GFW, and this should be pretty interesting to see. I wonder if CM Punk will be there, since CM Punk was in TNA for a while, but it'll be really interesting to see who the people are going to be. Latest rumors is that Ezekiel Jackson, he just got released not too long ago, he's going to be a member there. So in order for GFW to compete, and especially be a number two promotion, it's not very hard. I mean, you know, me as a journalist, me who gets paid to write stories about, to write articles about WWE and TNA, I think that I enjoy the product for the most part as far as TNA. There's a lot of things that I don't necessarily agree with as far as the creativity and the writing. But in saying all that to say, I don't think that GFW has a lot of competition to be the number two promotion. It just depends on who they acquire. And I would imagine a leading guy right now would be CM Punk. And then you can have a bunch of defects from both TNA. It can be kind of like a hodgepodge of WWE and TNA wrestlers, but you're not going to have very many people jump from WWE to GFW as far as the main eventers are concerned. Now, I can see a Dolph Ziggler, I can see a Damian Sandow, I can see a Cody Rhodes. Well, Cody Rhodes is mostly a WWE guy too, but I can see a Zack Ryder, I can see a Dolph Ziggler, like I said. People like that I can see jumping. Big E would be a good name, would be a good main event guy there. As far as TNA is concerned, Bully Ray, I can see him jumping. I can see maybe Bobby. Well, Bobby Roode's a TNA guy really through and through, but I could definitely see Bully jumping and maybe a few other people. I could see them jumping, but I don't see much. I hope that the GFW gives the WWE some type of competition more than TNA does. And saying all this to say, Kofi Kingston needs to go somewhere. Somewhere other than the WWE, because he's getting totally misused in the WWE. He's a really good talent, but, I mean, he is just getting totally misused.
He's getting misused, a lot of them. And that's kind of interesting that Jeff Jarrett's going to start up another promotion. He started up TNA, if I remember, which is good because I have faith in Jeff Jarrett. And, he is one of the guys, wrestlers, that you can look to and say that guy knows what he's doing. Good for him. As far as, competition for TNA, yeah, that wouldn't be too hard. I could probably throw something together with the action figures that I buy from WWE and put together a better show than TNA. But I'll give Jeff Jarrett that much, so good for him.
Indeed. Next, we have Daniel Bryan forced to wrestle. He was about to leave, but he was forced to wrestle. Goes against Alberto Del Rio. Good match. Alberto Del Rio is a good wrestler. He's a good mat wrestler. He can put on a good match. His character is just too stale, though. That's the problem with Del Rio. It was so hot in the beginning, and then it didn't take very long at all for it to just spiral down just very fastly. But he can still put on a good match, and I will give him that. So Daniel Bryan and Del Rio was a good match. It was a good match to see on a Raw, and it wasn't for the championship, but it still kept that Daniel Bryan as a fighting champion feel, which we definitely need to see in the WWE.
Yeah, it was good, and it seems like ever since he let go of what's his name?
Ricardo Rodriguez, yeah.
Now he's kind of gone downhill, and you haven't seen Ricardo for a while. But, I agree, he's a great mat wrestler.
Spanish announce table. He was the Spanish announce. He's on the Spanish announce team.
Is he really?
Yep.
No, it's always been Tito Santana and Bad News Brown. But anyway.
God rest his soul, Bad News Brown. yeah.
Del Rio, he can always put on a good match. He really can. That's one thing you can always get from. He's a solid performer. Character-wise, however, he's kind of lame. Lacking in it. He can do better. They just don't know what to do with him right now. So, but Dan O'Brien obviously put on a great show.
Indeed. Absolutely. Next, we got Kane appearing in the car. They go in the back, and Kane appearing in the car backstage, trying to get Brie. Yeah, it's starting to get a bit cheesy to me. Bad News Barrett retaining his title, defeating Big E Langston. Well, Big E. I wasn't surprised by this at all. I guess the question is, what is the WWE going to do with Big E?
We already talked about this, and it's just I don't think they know what they're going to do with Big E. He's got nothing going on. I mean, if he's going to keep losing to Barrett for the IC Championship, which he's done two nights in a row, I mean, he pretty much loses credibility. Throw him in the Mark Henry and Big Show stable.
Yeah.
I mean, that stinks because he's an awesome contender, but that's just the breaks of it sometimes.
Yeah. Zeb Coulter, in-ring promo with Jack Swagger. Yes, and then my boy, Adam Rose, comes out with his rosebuds because it's party time all the time. I don't know what the heck it is about Adam Rose, but I am a big Adam Rose fan. I just don't understand. I don't know what it is about Adam Rose. I liked him when he was Leo Kruger. But it's something about Adam Rose that I think is totally cool, and I'm not afraid to say it. I am as male can get. I work out all the time, and big guy, muscular guy, all male, but I will not be, I will not be afraid to admit that this song was a part of my workout routine today? Yes, Adam Rose is my boy, and I really, really hope that he becomes a really big player in the WWE. Although, on TV, it did not seem as if the crowd was the Albany crowd was really into Adam Rose. But we, I did see some reports on the site, wrestling.com, that the live crowd, people from the live crowd did, you know, comment and say that the live crowd was into it much more than the television or that we saw. It made us portray to see on TV. So that's, at least that's promising. I definitely think that Adam Rose, I mean, he's been, the guy's 34 years old. He's been wrestling for almost 20 years, and he's been in the WWE since 2010, wrestling with FCW. So he's paid his dues. I mean, he's been wrestling longer than a lot of people who's been champions. And so in 95 he started wrestling. So he's put in his dues. I don't necessarily know. I love the gimmick. A lot of people say that it's comedic, you know, another Santino Marella, blah, blah. But there's something different. There's something magnetic about Adam Rose and the Rosebuds because, once again, it's party time all the time. And I think that him against Jack Swagger, that would be a good way to really break him in and really kind of test the waters and see if the WWE really is latched on to Adam Rose. Now, NXT, when they're at Full Sail University, NXT crowd absolutely loves Adam Rose. I watch NXT every week, and they love Adam Rose. They all say, hey. I mean, they're all into it. Now, the crowd is, you know, what, five times bigger in arena shows, Raw and SmackDown, than it is at Full Sail. So we'll see if a much larger crowd who probably isn't as much into NXT as the I would say, well, with the WWE Network, there's a lot of people into NXT more, and so he's just not totally unknown. And so that'll help him, the WWE Network launching, that helps him. And so hopefully we'll see Adam Rose break out to be a really fun star that's very magnetic and people will latch on to him.
Yeah, magnetic, kind of like a certain Fandango.
Now, Fandangoing was magnetic, yes. I'll give you that. But Fandangoing, the dance was way over than the guy. Summer Rae's more over than Fandango. Now Layla's more over than Fandango. The dance was, without question, way over than Fandango. The theme song was more over than Fandango. He just can't buy a break. You have everything affiliated with Fandango more over than Fandango is. Now, Adam Rose versus Fandango, that'll be a really good feud. I think that'll work.
I think that'll work if they're like a tag team or something. But your Fandango hating just doesn't sit well with me, Mr. Featherstone.
I don't see Adam Rose. Adam Rose is too cool to be. Well, he was when he was Leo Kruger, he was a heel because he was more brute. Yeah, he was more of a mercenary, and you know, he's a big guy too, but. the Adam Rose, he's just too cool to be a to be a heel. And Fandango being a face, at one point in time it could have worked, but I think them feuding against each other would be a better idea. Next we have the Wyatt family versus the Shield. Good match. I knew it was going to be a good match. However, I would say this was not as – maybe it was the Albany crowd. They got a bit tired or something like that. But this match wasn't as exciting as the other matches that they put on. This is probably the worst match. It wasn't a bad match, but this is probably the worst match of the bunch.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. You got Shield and the Wyatts, and then Evolution comes in, kind of tears up the party, destroys Shield. I get it. It's great. I mean, it's going to add to further matches and pay-per-views. But all in all, the Wyatts are a bummer. Evolution's a bit of a bummer. Shield, they're gaining a lot more momentum. This is the momentum they should have had 8 months to a year ago. But it's working out now, but yeah, it seems like it's just kind of a bit too late to really do anything great, but they'll keep it going.
Well said. All right, real quick, let's go to SmackDown real quick before Extreme Rules. You had the Wyatt family defeating the Sheamus and the Usos, which was good. Just a few takeaways from this. RVD and Jack Swagger was a good match. The Dolph Ziggler and Damian Sandow's Magneto was embarrassing. They just continued to embarrass Damian Sandow. Big E actually had some leverage beating the snot out of Titus O'Neil, which is very interesting, but that didn't make a difference because they were just building him up to lose. And then Dean Ambrose retaining the U.S. Championship wasn't a bad main event, but of course we know now that he no longer has it. As far as Impact Wrestling is concerned, it's pretty good, pretty solid show. I was a fan of it. What's so funny about that is as far as spoilers are concerned, it just depends. But I look at them sometimes, and it depends on if it requires a good story to write, a good article to write about. But from the spoilers that I've seen, there's going to be a faction. looks like it's similar to the Nation of Domination. We're going to see a heel turn by a couple people. So that should be interesting how it pans out. So right now we got MVP coming out and stopping Bully Ray from putting Dixie Carter through a table, which was pretty interesting. And then the main event, of course, the six-man match was really good. Wolves and Sonata defeating the Bromans and DJ Zima. And like I said, pretty solid card. The main event was Eric Young defeating Bobby Roode. A handshake at the end because it was a really good competition. ROH was good too. Tommaso Ciampa retaining the TV title by defeating Roderick Strong. Silas Young defeating Romantic Touch. Jimmy Jacobs defeating Corey Hollis. Tadarius Thomas reluctantly being a member of the Decade, it looks like. And then Michael Elgin defeating Rocky Romero. Also a good match. Michael Elgin is going to be defending. He's going to be competing for the IWG Heavyweight Championship, which is a very long-standing championship that has a lot of good lineage to it. All right, flavor of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Who are the best heels of the 1990s? Similar to last week, Derek and I, we did a lot of talking, we did a lot of consulting, we threw some names out as possibilities, and then we focused and we honed them down to 10 names. Real quick, we don't have as much time as we had last week because of the Extreme Rules coverage, but honorable mention, of course, goes to Vince McMahon. We didn't put him in the top 10 because he's not a wrestler per se, but of course, Austin McMahon, one of the best feuds ever. And so, honorable mention goes to Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon is probably one of the most, he is the genius of wrestling. Now, you can say Paul Heyman is, you can say Jim Cornette. Vince McMahon is wrestling. He knows what he's doing. He does it all the time. You might want to question what he does sometimes, but when he's in it, he is in it. Awesome, probably one of the best heels of the 90s, just for the fact that he was the boss, the man, the feud. That was it.
Number 10 goes to Yokozuna, my Yokozuna, as Mr. Fuji would say. He really became such a prominent heel in more of the early 90s. That's the reason why he's not so much up. So he's not higher on the list because his heel run was mostly prominent in the first half of the decade, most notably around 93, when he won the Royal Rumble in 93, became champion. And, of course, he had the feuds with Bret Hart, had the feuds with Undertaker, and he was such a big man, and he was very agile for his size, and he was so intimidating because he was so agile and big at the same time. So Yokozuna was definitely one of the biggest heels of the 1990s.
Oh, definitely. Yokozuna was an awesome heel. I mean, he was the epitome of the biggest Japanese sumo wrestling machine, and he could move so quickly. Managed by Mr. Fuji and a Mr. James E. Cornette. Absolutely an awesome heel. He'll always go down in history as the 1990s. Somebody, a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely. Banzai. Next we have Vader. Next we have Vader, another person who was managed by Jim Cornette. How about that? Finally, your Cornette references are making sense. Oh, sheesh. Vader was a bigger heel though when he was in the WCW. Of course, when he was feuding with Sting, when he was feuding with Ric Flair, Starrcade 93, and he was such a dominant heel in the WCW in the early 90s, and he was so intimidating. He had the pads. It was some type of helmet that was on the shoulders that blew out smoke, and he was agile. The guy would do moonsaults and just kind of he would do like a splash off the second ropes. He would just kind of bounce on the ropes, and the guy was very agile for another. Speaking of similar to Yokozuna, very agile for a big man. And I remember when he was first coming into the WCW, he just beat the crap out of Tom Zink at Clash of the Champions when he debuted. And throughout that time, I remember they were just booking him so massively, saying that he won multiple titles between the Americas, the States and Japan and all over the world. And then when he went to the WWE, he was such a big heel, and I remember when he splashed Gorilla Monsoon, and he was such an intimidating heel. So Vader definitely goes in that list of top heels.
He goes in that list of top heels just for the fact that you stole my thunder when he came and destroyed Gorilla Monsoon. I remember that when he came to WWE. Yeah, I remember he used to take his helmet and shoulder pads. They're all like fit together. He'd set it on the ramp, shoot out all that smoke and everything. So
yeah,
I mean, he's
absolutely
been such a phenomenal heel. He was always billed as somebody huge. He punched Cactus Jack in the face and broke his nose just for a promo.
Sure did.
That's how hard it was. And you got to give him credit for that. So hear it up for the Mastodon.
Yep. He had a match with Stan Hansen. Go YouTube that match in Japan, him with Stan Hansen. Talk about stiff blows. Talk about an all-out fight. I believe one of their eyes. I think it was Vader's eye went out of the socket for a while. It was, yeah, him and Hansen would go at it. All right, real quick, we have number 8, the loose cannon, Brian Pillman. Very self-explanatory. This guy was a nut. And his ECW days, really his ECW days really made him such an amazing heel. And when he first started off as, you know, just, you know, really vanilla, run-of-the-mill, Cincinnati Bengal, high flyer, light heavyweight Brian Pillman, it was okay. He was decent. But when he made that heel turn and started feuding with Brad Armstrong, I believe, and Jushin Liger, it was really a pivotal moment for his career. And then, of course, the Hollywood Blondes, and then his ECW run was phenomenal as a heel. And then joining the Horsemen, joining the Hart Foundation. It was he's got a gun, you know, with Austin. So, yeah, he was definitely one of the best heels of the 1990s.
Oh, he's got a gun. That was one of the biggest moments of Monday Night Raw, period. I remember where I was when I saw that. Everybody does. That's what everybody talks about the next day. Stone Cold Steve Austin was breaking into his house, and he had a gun. And he pulled out the gun, and everybody's flipping out JR and Jerry the King Law. Awesome TV. You could not script that. That was just beautiful. And the whole time he was with the Hart Foundation, I mean, he was the loose cannon. He did so much in so little time, but he makes this list because that's who Brian Pillman is.
Absolutely. Number 7 goes to Sid. Throughout the 90s, of course, it was Sid Justice, main evented WrestleMania 8. It was WrestleMania 8 with Hogan. He basically was Sid, you know, Sid Vicious in WCW. Had a good heel run, and then Psycho Sid also had a heel run going back to the WWE. So he was a very consistent heel. Had a couple of decent face runs too, but for the most part, he was a very consistent heel throughout the 1990s. Had a world title run, main evented WrestleMania against The Undertaker. So definitely should be on the list.
He should be on the list just because of his longevity, just because he was a huge monster. I mean, he's a big guy. Psycho Sid, he is the leader and the ruler of the world.
The master
I never really knew
and the ruler
minute.
Of the world.
But anyway, Psycho Sid, Sid Justice, Sid Vicious, whatever you want to call him. I mean, he deserves to be on this list as far as the 1990s goes.
Indeed. Real quick, number 6 goes to Steve Austin. When he was stunning Steve Austin, the WCW had a good U.S. title run, a couple of them. Had a couple good feuds in the WCW. Of course, the Hollywood Blondes again. Mentioned that again with Pillman. When he came as the ringmaster, wasn't very much over, but when we became Stone Cold Steve Austin in the 90s, feuding with Bret Hart, he was an amazing heel. Won the Royal Rumble, cheated. He got eliminated and came back and won the Royal Rumble. He actually won 3 Royal Rumbles. Two in the 90s. But yeah, just a really, really good heel. His prominence became a face, but throughout the 90s, he had a really good heel run. And of course, his run in ECW as well for a year.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, what can you say about him that hasn't already been said? The absolute rattlesnake, probably the best entertainer in WWE history. I mean, not to be rivaled, but he was a face, but he was also a heel. Awesome. He could do either one. That's what makes him so awesome. He could do either one and just make it look absolutely perfect.
Absolutely. We give 5 to Bret Hart. We understand that he had most of his run in the 90s was babyface, but the foreign anti-America gimmick just took the cake. That was one of the biggest heel moments in WWE history, so he definitely was one of the top 5 heels in the 90s.
Top 5 heel because he hated Americans. You want to stick up for someone like Stone Cold Steve Austin and someone who, like Pete Rose, who gambled, named the street after him? That's what America is for you.
Yeah,
give me a break for a heart cry, baby. You go back to Canada. Austin, he totally made that gold.
Totally.
I mean,
totally a heat magnet. Absolutely. Number four, real quick, HBK, his heel turn in Marty, against Marty Jannetty, runs in Intercontinental title, DX, the list goes on.
List goes on. HBK, in my book, is always going to be probably number one next to Ric Flair. HBK can do no harm. He was a quintessential bad guy, good guy, whatever you wanted him to be, he always showed up. Absolute smart aleck, even a better smart aleck than Ric Flair.
Indeed. Speaking of Ric Flair, real quick, number three goes to Ric Flair. Had most of his run in the 80s, but he still had some really prominent heel moments in the 90s to make him one of the top heels of the 90s.
Ric Flair will be the top heel of the 2020s. I mean, Ric Flair can always be. He can always show up, do what he wants to do. He is Slick Rick. He can do no wrong. He is an awesome heel, awesome face, whatever he wanted to do. He shows up, does the job. My hat's off to him, number three.
Absolutely. Number two goes to Sergeant Slaughter. Desert Storm, Desert Shield, turns his back on America. One of the best heel moments in WWE history, hands down.
Hands down, Mr. G.I. Joe. I love Iraq. I hate America. It just
absolutely didn't.
Everybody felt it. It was great.
It was absolutely awesome time. And at number one, come on now, Bash of the Beach, July 1996. The heel turn heard around the world, spawns off the NWO, becomes the black-bearded, just an amazing heel. Nobody ever thought it could happen, but Hulk Hogan takes the cake, number one.
Number one, Hulk Hogan takes the cake. It was absolutely marvelous, the best moment in wrestling history that anyone could really remember as far as fathom and just the depth of what happened. Last thing I want to say tonight is rest in peace, Grandma. Derek loves you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sorry for the loss. All right, well, 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket. Kudos to Derek for just continuing to stay in the fight and continue to support and give us his time throughout this sad loss. So thank you, Derek, so much for that. And cravewrestling@gmail.com, the number is the website or the email to go to as far as your thoughts and any type of donations. We thrive on your donations, so keep them coming. cravewrestling@gmail.com through PayPal. Crave Wrestling at Twitter, Twitter at Crave Wrestling, and, of course, wrestling.com, Bleacher Report. Check me out. Facebook, like Crave Wrestling. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. Day loves Elijah, and have a great week. God bless. Goodbye.